This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. For over 80 years, children of all backgrounds have been going to Camp Joy to get in touch with nature. And for 40 years, Camp Joy has helped adults develop leadership skills and networks that have driven careers. But even in the woods, change at the top opens up new opportunities. When Camp Joy hired a new executive director a year and a half ago, she saw potential for the institution to lead in new ways. The board has set a bold goal to be at net zero everything in 10 years. To explain what that means and what it will take, we are joined today by the executive director of Camp Joy, Jennifer Eismeyer, the outdoor school program director for Camp Joy, Nathan Hurt, and the partner at Donovan Energy, Andy Holzhauser. You can join our discussion by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody, to Cincinnati Edition. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dave.
Jen, let's get started. Camp Joy has created this bold goal. Gee, I've never heard that term before, to be net zero everything in 10 years. What does everything mean?
It means that we are maximizing our resource utilization so that we are taking advantage of all of the natural resources available to us at Camp Joy and challenging our entire operating model. We've chosen five areas of focus to start: waste, water, energy, land management, and the built environment. And in each one of those five areas, we're really evaluating how are we using our resources so that we are using as much renewable energy as possible. We're reusing our water. We're minimizing, if not eliminating, waste that's leaving our site. We're looking at the kind of habitats that we provide, habitats that we support across our 317-acre campus, and critically evaluating our buildings for either new construction or retrofitting so that we're taking full advantage of the advantages that are provided by our climate and aspect.
Okay, we'll get into a lot of those details as we go along here, but why? Why are you doing this? How does this fit into the mission of Camp Joy?
Well, there's a couple things. Camp Joy was pretty revolutionary in 1937 when kids were essentially pulled out of the inner city in the wake of the devastating floods, and it was really meant to be a place of joy for kids who just had not had opportunity. That's been a founding value that is driving us now. And when we desegregated in the mid-1940s, we were the first camp in the region to do so. So the natural resources utilization effort is very much in alignment with the big just willingness to kind of try new things and launch into things that others weren't doing. The sustainability initiative is very much like that. And it's really about thinking globally in terms of the 8 billion people that are on this planet and being responsible in the way that we manage our resources.
Okay. Andy, you consult with a lot of organizations around energy, waste, et cetera, et cetera. How bold is Camp Joy's goal here of net zero everything?
Well, it's extremely bold. It's, you know, if it was easy, I think you'd see a lot more companies of all sizes do it, nonprofit, for-profit. You see and hear in the news, you know, companies like Procter & Gamble or Apple and Microsoft going and making pledges toward 100% renewable energy in the coming 10 or 15 years. And they have massive teams of really smart people and a healthy bank account to make investments. It's still not easy, but they have a lot of resources to help them get there. We're bringing this down to a very local level and bringing together a lot of smart people in the region in their different subject matter areas, and we're going to get there. And, you know, I think what's great about this plan is that in the midst of the planning process, as the planning process proceeds, there's also actual tangible steps and actions already being taken. So the planning process is evolving and keeps on moving, but then meanwhile, there's already steps being taken toward making an impact.
For example,
LED lighting. So, you know, the camp could have been traditional and just conventionally replace fluorescent lighting with fluorescent lighting, like a lot of businesses and other nonprofit organizations do, while the plan starts to take shape. Or, in fact, that became the first effort, which was to go 100% LED, a recognition that there's a, you know, less than 2-year return on investment to do something like that, and it provides a very monetizable, measurable economic and environmental impact. And so that effort was completed about 6 months ago. The savings are already starting to happen on that. And, you know, now
savings from electricity use, is that where you see it?
That's right. So in lighting, if you're replacing what is typically conventional lighting to 100% LED, you're going to reduce your lighting load by about 60 to 70%. And for most companies, lighting itself is about 20 or 30% of the electricity bill. So that's a direct savings. It's happening already. And then as you start to see savings, you start to build momentum. And you can use those savings to be reinvesting into bigger, bolder ideas. And that's exactly what CampJoy is doing. It's easier said than done. A lot of companies and governments and businesses say that this makes sense, but to actually put it into effect, to have the board support that they do, in our experiences, it's a joy and an honor to work with them as their partner, and it's great to see things already start to happen.
I want to get Nate in here, but I don't want to let go of this idea yet. Can you give us any idea of, and people who may, there's going to be a lot of people who are listening who have never been to CampJoy. So you have a lot of buildings because people mm-hmm. stay in a lot of different buildings. You have large places where people can come together, the P&G Pavilion. So there's a variety of buildings, the dining hall, but there's a lot of buildings. Give us any sense of electric bills monthly, how much, what those costs are, and what just from that LED change mm-hmm. we might be talking about in terms of monetizing it, getting mm-hmm. return?
Our annual energy bill for all of our sources of energy, which range from electricity to fuel oil to propane, is $100,000 a year. We have about 35 buildings that people are inhabiting, and then we have another 7 to 10 structures, which it's just a structure, across 317 acres of campus. We anticipate that we'll be saving about $20,000 a year.
$20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually measurable.
It's a big chunk, yeah.
It is a big chunk. And so really this effort started in earnest about a year ago. And we knew that, and with the help of Andy and Donovan Energy, we knew that we needed seed money to do this. I mean, we have operating expenses, but it takes some money to operate outside of the normal system. So the LED lighting was one where we could make a relatively small investment and very quickly see a return on that. We also started evaluating our land and how we're using our resources.
I'm going to get to that.
But there's much more that can be done with energy, but we just needed to start.
Okay. Nate, you're the director of outdoor school programming.
Yep.
So you've been there a long time.
20 years.
20 years. And can you see ways going forward that you could actually build into the curriculum, to what you do with the kids who come to the camp, things that are going to be happening under this program, so that they can learn something about environmentalism, about energy conservation, about reuse of resources? Can you see – have you begun to play with those ideas?
100%, I'm super excited about the opportunities. I definitely want, you know, not only to be, for us to be able to practice and to go through this process, but I want there to be – displayable options with all this of the new technologies to, you know, to have a tour of those facilities that are either taking care of our waste or have the measurables be available for the students to come out and help us understand and be able to take that data and crunch it and compare it to past data and to see that whether it's monetized or just simple, you know, numbers to look at and crunch and say, yeah, this is making a difference here.
So you can see building this in, measuring it. And I would think that children who are coming out to Camp Joy for either in the summer or during the school year, in their schools, these are topics that are being talked about, but mm-hmm. they're sort of confined to books. And here is a chance to see a sort of a laboratory that could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, we've definitely always tried to be a land lab for our schools. And so this is just another great opportunity for a contemporary topic not only to be able to explore our land, but also to look at the natural resource science technology integration.
Well, before we take a break, Jennifer, I want to ask you a question. You are, and in the opening of the show, I tease this. This is what you get when you hire a forester. Your background is in forestry.
It is, yes.
You and I both know that. And when you went out to Camp Joy and you looked on those 317 acres, there's a ton of those acres that are still in forest. They're totally forested. What did you see that maybe the rest of us didn't see?
Opportunity. Trees are the ultimate renewable resource. They're perfect machines, and they're perfectly elegant systems. We have 200 wooded acres at Camp Joy, 118 of them. All 200 are in a forest management plan. What this means for the organization long term is we essentially have, I call it a diversified endowment. We essentially have a renewable income stream every 20 years, 20 to 25 years. And as long as we're very careful about how we manage that, we are providing lumber, which is, there's a market for the trees that we have at Camp Joy. And we are very, very carefully making sure that we're growing different kinds of habitat. We have diverse tree species composition, and that we're supporting a healthy forest ecosystem and the attendant wildlife habitat that goes along with it.
So that, I want to be clear, that means you're going in and you're actually cutting trees and selling the wood. Is that right?
We are.
What kind of trees are valuable on the market?
Black walnut's the big one. Black walnut, white oak, and red oak are the big three. And then there's another tier, kind of a fourth tier of black cherry, tulip poplar that are medium.
So what happens to, in that first tier, if you don't cut them down and use them as lumber, if you just let them keep growing?
Nothing. They're part of a healthy forest ecosystem. Nothing happens. The other thing that we have that's a big part of this initial harvest is we have a lot of ash. And this is a big deal for anyone who has trees anywhere. Ash, for us, they're a big risk factor because we have 1,200 ash trees that are dead or dying at Camp Joy. So we have a responsibility for people's safety to get those out of our woodland. But, you know, certainly forests have evolved to be able to have mature trees of all ages, mature trees that will reach their end of their natural life and they'll fall down and they'll start all over again.
But if there is a point at which you can't let a tree go too long or it's not valuable in the market, right?
That's right. So, I mean, we had a partner and a consulting forester. I am a forester by training, but I have not been a professional forester. So we definitely needed help in this area. Our first step, job one, is to get the ash trees out and then to establish a diverse mix of trees across the different landscapes we have.
Andy, okay, using LED lights, mm-hmm. I think we can all understand mm-hmm. that. But in a place like Camp Joy, where you've got all of these kids coming in and adults coming in, eating in the cafeteria, producing a lot of waste,
mm-hmm. yeah,
of all kinds, and what are the options there? What can be done with that?
Well, with energy and waste and the other areas that Jen mentioned earlier, that's the focus of the plan. We gathered together a big group of us, about 25 of us, a few weeks ago, all in at Camp Joy for a day-long design thinking session, a charrette, really, to put all the ideas on the table. Because to answer that,
charrettes make it sound so significant.
It does.
Yes, go ahead.
So we charretted. We charretted all day, and it was great. But we got a lot of really smart people from the region in the government sector, in the nonprofit sector, in the for-profit sector, and then we had our partner John Picard, a kind of an energy futurist, come in from Silicon Valley and spend the day with us as well. And we put all the ideas on the table. You know, in a day like that, I think the worst thing you can do is not get the idea out, because after that, it's going to be trickier to get the idea in. And so, you know, we don't have the answer yet, but we're taking a very deliberate process to get there by inviting experts in the space to help us think about that. You know, there are challenges in our community of finding compost solutions and anaerobic digestion, and this goes far beyond, you know, just the scope of what Camp Joy's goals are. But we're going to get there, and we're going to figure it out, and we're going to do that because we've brought together a really smart group of, you know, 25 or 30 people that have the subject matter expertise in those five areas to help us cross the finish line.
So on that composting, mm-hmm. do you imagine that's going to take place on property, or do you imagine that has to be trucked someplace and compost it? I mean, we're talking about large amounts mm-hmm. here because you feed all these people. What do you think?
We don't know yet.
You don't know yet. Okay.
We're exploring our options. And waste is one of the trickiest of the five because there's just – we just generate a lot of rubbish just in the course of our day. And if we even just for one day across the board said to ourselves, we're just going to pack out the amount of waste, whether it's food wrappers or from food production, if it's organic waste, so kitchen scraps, we were just going to set it aside and just see how big the pile was. I mean, we've got a diverse waste stream. So managing that is going to be a challenge for us. And we've started looking at, can we source compostable paper plates and cups and things if we don't get rid of them altogether, right? So then we start saying, well, maybe we'll just stop using disposable. Well, then that's got an impact on our kitchen. So they're washing a lot more dishes than they're currently washing. So we start getting into the details on these things, and we have to really kind of sharpen our pencils and ask ourselves what's possible. What can we operationally afford to do in terms of time and money?
And I think in Jen's description of that ideal, what that demonstrates is how important it is to bring together this interdisciplinary focus and a large group of Jen's colleagues coming to the table, kind of rethinking everything to really make this come to fruition, from maintenance of light bulbs to what the impact of any of this is on kitchen staff to how the capital expenditure planning is done, to how they fundraise for future capital expenditures too, and everything else in between. You know, it's a very interdisciplinary effort to really make it a succeed instead of just thinking of it as a one-off project.
One of the things I was thinking about was Cincinnati Zoo is another place that has mm-hmm. really tried to move in this area, and of course they're running lots of people through bigger numbers every day, but in their eating facilities, they wanted to go to they get rid of the plastic forks and things and get to implements that could biodegrade. Found that was pretty hard.
It is hard.
Very hard. One advantage you have is because you have people there for a week or 3 days or whatever it happens to be, you use real utensils, which can be washed. You don't have to recycle. I mean, you got a lot of stuff that either has to be composted or recycled, but at least you got some stuff there, some advantages.
Mm-hmm. We do. But every decision that we make is going to have an impact one way or another.
Nate, a lot of this is going to depend, and we were talking about the kitchen staff before, mm-hmm. but a lot of this is going to depend on the willingness of the staff to, you know, buy into the vision.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, the crazy new CEO and the outside experts and all of that. What do you see happening here?
I mean, I think there's a healthy buzz that's, you know, I mean, this is exciting to be able to – Joy has gone on this path to do really well for people, and now we're trying to branch that out to our environment as well. And I think – the staff can rally behind that. You know, it's something that we feel good about what we're doing, and now we can feel extra good about what we're doing. And, you know, I was talking to our operations director, Casey Miller, today, and he was scratching his head on the math of how the solar panels, how much space that would take to fill, you know, if he's trying to do the math. And it was just fun. You know, this is a guy who's trying to.
New.
Yeah. It's just, there's lots of different opportunities here. So,
what about water? I mean, that's you do have a facility on site where you treat sewage, as I understand
it. We do.
And, I mean, that's been there for some time. But you got a lot of water. You got a lot of needs for water. What are the options? What are the What are the ideas about water?
The biggest one, the easiest one, is to simply reuse water. Period. So we use potable water, drinking water, for everything. And we don't reuse it at all. We send it to our packet plant or to a septic system, depending on where the water's being used on campus. And then it's treated and put back into the environment. We have a ton of opportunity to be collecting rainwater and using it to irrigate our orchard or to water the plants in the greenhouse, to be putting water on the road to keep the dust down, even within buildings, to be retrofitting our buildings so that we're using rainwater for flushing toilets, for instance. There's really, I mean, we've set a goal to use water 3 times before we do anything, before we release it, which is a pretty big deal.
Wow, that's really kind of fascinating. Andy, so, is that?
Yeah, so that solution happens through a combination of technology. So we're putting technology solutions on the table. We're scanning the market, you know, nationally to look for the best in class technology solutions. But then there's also, in an example like that, some wonky kind of permitting issues that you run into as well when it comes to—
I did
to,
want to bring that up.
unfortunately, right? I mean, when it comes to doing good, you have to be aware of those too. And that's kind of the some of the mundane stuff that we're just determined to get to work once we find the right kind of engineering and technology solutions that works for the camp and most importantly for the camp's stakeholders, for those for the kids that are there and get so much out of it.
You know, the zoo really was relentless in their solar installation, and they simply refused to say no. And so just as Andy's talking about permitting, I mean, there are 100 obstacles to each one of these things. There's so many reasons to say no. And it's simply a commitment to we operate differently here. We just operate differently here. That's where we're headed. And I cannot thank enough the folks who have been involved from across the region so far to help us think this through. It is very complex. I definitely don't have really any of the answers. This is very much a group initiative as we continue really forever.
That's what leadership's mm-hmm. about. You don't have to have all the answers. You have to get the right people there and get them around the table so that, you know, that the ideas and the answers maybe can come. Andy, this is not just about Camp Joy. Mm-hmm. In a larger sense, you're in the energy consulting environment. We now have a presidential administration that clearly is not interested in this mm-hmm. and actually in some areas is pulling back supports. What has that meant? I mean, you're in business. You're trying to work with companies that are going to pay you to help you get this done. Is that change in federal policy going to stop this? Do you see – are you worried?
It could be better, but I think what you see, you know, the chamber had former Department of Energy Secretary Dr. Ernest Moniz in town a few weeks ago, and there was a group of us, about 25 of us there for breakfast. And when he was asked the question, what happens to all of these things that are happening when the U.S. pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords? And his response, which I think is a good one, it made me feel a little bit better. That was sort of my gut, but his response was that on that same day that pullout occurred, you saw many mayors, hundreds of mayors, many governors across the country, including Mayor Cranley, come out and say, we're going to go it alone. We're going to do it in the city. We're going to do it at the state level, even without the federal government's commitment. So when you have sort of that level of support, you also have, from just a direct policy and regulatory standpoint, a lot of the major policies for energy and particularly clean energy happen really more at the state level. Our nation's never really had a federal energy policy. So this administration at the state level in Ohio, for example, has been fairly moderate, could do more always, but fairly moderate. And so by and large, it comes up to us on a local level, at a camp, in a city, in a building, to make an impact and then have our stakeholders see it and want to take it home and to their business and do the same thing.
Nate, I'm basically out of time, but we can't leave this without asking, you know, the basic role of on a day-by-day basis for Camp Joy is having children and or adults, but in the summer especially, children out there doing what children do at camp, How are things going this summer at camp?
It's been an exceptional season. It's been hot and, you know, but, you know, we, kids are just having a blast. The staff are absolutely amazing. It's been a great season.
So this is, things are moving forward on the ground. You're doing the work you do.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. Jen, Nate, Andy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.